It's the 50th episode of The Stage Right Side. Isn't that wild? I don't know how we got here, but I thank you all so much for listening and joining me every week or whenever I do The Stage Right Side podcast. This week's episode is fire. I have an interview with Cassandra Trinneri, a.k.a. Cassie, who is a former ABT principal dancer who jumped ship to join the Vienna State Ballet in Vienna, Austria. And it's a really interesting tale of boldness and courage as she leaves her dream job to sort of take a leap into the unknown. And she speaks so beautifully on it, and she's so candid and funny, and it's a really good interview. So I'm so excited for you all to hear that. Just a little bit of info about this week before we get into the interview is we started back to rehearsal at ABT this week, and we're working on Lara Lubavitch's Othello, and I will play Iago, which is a fabulous role. I'm really enjoying the rehearsals, and I can't wait for you all to see that come March when we do our spring season at the Koch Theater. I remember I was telling y'all about Avatar last week, and I went and I saw Avatar 3 in the theaters, and I don't know, y'all. I just don't get it. I feel like it's so pretty to look at. Like, it's, you know, my friend Reed Bartlemy was saying that it's like if Lisa Frank was made by straight people. And I have to agree with that. You know, it is so cool to look at. The animation is outrageous. But I just don't really, I'm not buying it. I don't know. I guess technically I am since I bought a ticket to see it. I don't know. Go see it. Go support films, whatever. I enjoyed it. It was not time wasted, and it was worth every penny, but it didn't move me or inspire me in the way that I would hope a film would. Whatever. I also went to see Pam Tanowitz's Pastoral at the Rose Theater at Lincoln Center Jazz, and that was absolutely beautiful. It was like a Bella went as well, and she said it was like a forest bath. It's these interpolations of Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony. I don't know the name of it. I'm wrong, probably. But done by Carolyn Shaw with set pieces and decor by Sarah Crowner and dance by the Pam Tanowitz Dance Company. And they were amazing. And it's such a unique experience, about an hour long of very, very hard technical dancing executed beautifully. And just the atmosphere, it's like a really unique visual audio experience. I really enjoyed it. I don't know if it's still running, but if you haven't seen Pam Tanowitz's work, check it out. I think it's really interesting and quite beautiful. So check that out. Also, I'm watching Fallout on Amazon Prime, which is based on a video game of the same name, I believe. And I'm really enjoying that. It's fantastical. It's like tongue-in-cheek. It's kind of camp. But I really enjoy that. All right, let's get into the interview. You're going to love it. Cassie's awesome. And I hope you are inspired. Also, I have a new article out on my Substack sort of summarizing and going deeper on this interview with Cassie about upending one's life in honor of change. So thanks again for being here for the 50th episode of The Stage Right Side. Enjoy the interview. Cassie, welcome back to The Stage Right Side.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I miss
you've
so
been
much.
You've been on The Stage Right Side like four times now. You're like maybe my most repeated guest other than like Reed.
Reed. Oh, everyone's best guest.
True.
I miss Reed. Oh my God.
I do too. He just invited me to see the Pam Tanowitz dance, Pastoral, and I don't think I can go, which is a bummer, but I would really like to.
It was a bummer. I think she's coming here, actually.
Cool. Yeah, tell Pam I said hi. You're probably going to see her before I do.
Probably. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I've never danced her work before, but we're doing a duet that she choreographed on the Royal Ballet, I believe.
Is it Dispatch?
I don't know the name of it. I should.
Dispatch is iconic. I want to do it so bad.
It's a pas de deux, yeah?
Yes.
Yes, that must be it.
I mean, it's part of a bigger work, but the duet is, I think, came first. I'm not sure. And there's a wonderful video of William Bracewell, and I think it's Anna Rose Sullivan.
Yes, 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 that's the one.
It's amazing. It is so chic. Yeah. And Reed and Harriet did the costumes, of course. Okay, before we get too in the weeds, I've already introduced you on the front end of the podcast, so I just want to sort of dive right in and go back like a year or two to your principal with American Ballet Theater. You are however many years old, and you're thinking, what if I tried something new?
Yeah.
Tell me about why you felt this way, why you got an itch, because I did a very similar thing to you where I jumped a ship like halfway through my career and started a whole new life in New York. I was in Boston Ballet for 10 years. I was a principal there, for those of you who don't know. And then I, you know, auditioned for ABT, got in and uprooted my whole life and moved to New York and like started over in a way. So where were you when you got the itch and why did you act on it?
Gosh, that's such a good question. I mean, I think I always entered into this career with a massive amount of curiosity. And ABT was 100% the dream, you know, in terms of where I wanted to be. And, you know, we all were just growing up watching the iconic principal dancer superstars.
Yeah. Wait, why was it the dream for you? I know why it was for me. No. Was it just like the videos you saw, the DVDs and stuff?
From what I can recall, it was a combination of things. I remember as a young person, I wasn't really exposed to very much beyond ABT. And meaning what access we might have had to videos and what was sort of being pushed upon us in 2000, right?
Yeah.
And when I was doing my first auditions for summer intensives, the other priority I had was I wanted to be in New York. I knew I wanted to be in New York one day. I first visited New York when I was 9. And before I even knew I wanted to be a dancer, I just thought, this is my city. These are my people. I don't know anything else, but I do know I wanted to be here. So I auditioned for New York City Ballet Summer Intensive when I was 11. And then I auditioned for ABT Summer Intensive. Just knowing that both of those companies were based in New York, obviously. Yeah.
Was it Sex and the City that taught you about New York or what?
You and I both know I was not allowed to watch that.
Oh my God. T.
We're talking growing up evangelical. She was like living her Southern, you know, life. And but that came later. So where was I? I wanted to be in New York. I loved the city. I loved the clothes. I loved the people. I loved everything about it. And, I didn't get into New York City Ballet and I was crushed. I was so crushed. I remember just sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. I remember I had just gotten my first pair of pointe shoes and they asked us to do, I hadn't even left the bar yet. And they were like, you need to do a pirouette in the center. And I just remember being so determined and I failed at like a basic single pirouette. Anyway, didn't get in, got into ABT. And to tell you the truth, I fell in love with this brand, perhaps, you know. I went to Summer Intensive in Alabama and we were shown videos of, you know, I think honestly, if I'm being honest, I think it was a video of Romeo and Juliet, Alessandra Ferri, and Angel. And I just remember seeing that and thinking, oh, I want to do that. I want to do that ballet. I want to look like that on stage. It just moved me in such a way. It felt very cinematic. It felt dramatic. I mean, I wanted to be a Disney Channel star. Like I wanted to be like in the world of being in other worlds.
Yeah.
I think from a very early age, you know, I was obsessed with theater and the idea of being on film and transforming and, you know, all those things. So I think that's what really attracted me to ABT, if I'm being honest. And from there, I was just invited back. I went to New York, and there just didn't really seem to be another path.
Wait, so how old were you when you did the ABT summer course?
Gosh, I think Alabama, I was 12. For summer in New York, I was 13.
So, just also to fast forward like 1,000 years.
Totally.
You're a principal dancer in American Ballet Theater, which, you know, as it turns out, was a dream of yours. You were Juliet, you know?
Yeah.
What makes you say, I think I can learn more by doing this crazy thing, which is moving continents and, you know, doing that?
Yeah.
Tell me how you got there.
Back on track. I guess my point was, let's go back to the very beginning. What I wanted to share was I kind of entered into ABT already knowing that I would want to explore. I knew I wanted to eventually experience life elsewhere. I don't know if I knew that would be within my dance career, but I knew that it was a possibility. I think the real tipping point was just getting injured. Mm. You know, it was our last Met season. So we're in 2024. I had fractured my rib on stage. I had just experienced some heartbreak. Like, I'd been broken up with. What else was going on? I mean, I was just kind of forced to sit down on the couch, missed out on half of a season.
Yeah.
And just started thinking like, well, how much time do I have? One, how much do I want to accomplish with the limited amount of time that we have in this career? You know, and, what have I accomplished so far? What can I now do to experience just more growth as a, not just a person, but as an artist?
How do you feel like, sorry to interrupt you, but you mentioned heartbreak, and I find, you know, the seasons of love to be really, sort of like catalytic. That's not a word, but they are catalysts. And what about this particular situation that you were in pushed you to get a little wilder with your adventurous spirit?
Right. I guess it was a moment where I felt so untethered to anything keeping me in one place, you know, or, you know, okay, I don't really have to consider anyone else. You know, and I think, like you said, it's just an opportunity to start afresh, start over. And I think throughout our careers, it's just been such a bizarre time between COVID and, you know, there have been opportunities for us to just sit down and reflect on multiple occasions for you, a massive injury. And each time something like that happens, when I start to reflect, I think about, my God, look at how much you've accomplished during this time. And yet there's still so much I hope to do. And so how can I position myself to make some dreams come true? And so that compounded with some powerful painkillers and just a touch of depression. I was like, well, I mean, this is like kind of divine timing, but, you know, I was reflecting on who I admire as well in this field. And one of those people is Alessandra Ferri. And, you know, the person who sort of touched me as a young person and their performances. And I thought I think that what I have to offer this art form aligns with the priorities of this person.
So for the folks listening who might not know who Alessandra is, I'm sure all the listeners do, but if they don't, why don't you just give me a little log line of Alessandra?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. How to do this?
Just, you know, boil it down. Be reductive.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that.
I can do it. I'll do it.
Ask me one question and I'm like, well,
so Alessandra Ferri, former star, she's Italian. She's a former star of American Ballet Theater, like big star, 90s, 2000s, and current director of the Vienna State Ballet, which is part of the umbrella of the Vienna State Opera, which is the sort of government-funded arts organization that Cassie dances for in Vienna. They have a big ballet company that does all the classics as well as, you know, modern classics and new works. And Cassie has joined recently as a principal dancer. So why Alessandra?
Bravo.
thank you.
I always admired her so much as a dancer. And
why?
You know, besides her gorgeous lines and movement quality, just her dramatic qualities, her gift as a character artist.
Yeah.
And how
completely
she
agree.
Infused that with her movement. And now learning so much from her and spending so much time with her in the studio, I'm finding new ways to access my body in new ways. She has so much knowledge technically in how to utilize, like I have naturally very archy feet and a flexible back and so I think it's nice to be able to work with someone who, I mean, her gifts are far beyond mine, but I think it's been cool.
The facility Olympics.
You're like,
I have really archy feet and like a really flexible back and I'm like gorgeous. So it's like, it's just hard. It's just hard out here.
Basically, I was like, huh.
I am her. She is me.
God, I wish. Well, and it's crazy too, because I mean, I'm watching videos of these. Everybody's facility is crazy now. There's something in the water, kids. It's crazy. Yeah. I am nothing, but I also appreciate, you know, just being in the studio with her so much. And what was I saying? I'm getting off track again.
Basically, sorry, I keep doing jokes.
So I said what I loved about her. We love these things, but her approach to narrative ballets is really extraordinary. In terms of how she thinks about character, and she has so much knowledge about how to use the body in a way that is human and natural while executing classical vocabulary.
Yeah.
And I find, you know, something she spoke about a lot was how can we bring classical ballet to today's generation? How can we make it feel relevant still? And she said it's through telling these stories from a truthful place. So me as Cassie will approach Giselle differently from another dancer, but as long as each person is really coming to the character with honesty and truth, and if it's believable, and let's find each person's way of doing that, then it will resonate with an audience of today, even if it is, you know, a 19th century classic where the épaulement or the way we use our shoulders is this a certain way? Or, I mean, ballet is just so alien. It's such a foreign thing to watch a body do as an audience member.
I mean, I think
connect to it, you know,
sorry to interrupt, but I find it really interesting because a lot of what ballet was founded on was what I view now to be quite camp.
Mm-hmm.
and, you know, film and television and all of these things, the way it is executed has changed so much. And I think Alessandra is a proponent of like filmic authenticity. And it doesn't look like, I'll think of even someone like Makarova, where it's like, that was really genuine to her. And it was also a product of a time.
Makarova had a very certain film noir approach to the work.
It's just a different...
Yeah,
it's just a product of our time. It's like we can't help but be representative of the time that we live in. And I think it's almost more radical, her approach, given when she was an active performing ballerina, because those people perhaps were still even doing their version of that. And I've certainly experienced that and give it value and love it because it's fabulous. Yeah. But I also see the value in finding your way and finding your voice, whether it be melodramatic in a fabulous, exciting, sort of like Mother Russia way, or this new approach that you feel inspired by.
Yeah. And I think what's been cool too is exactly to your point, to know how you as an actor and a dancer can shift your approach depending on the ballet, depending on, it's like being in a film directed by Paul Thomas Anderson versus, I don't know, Stephen King or like whatever. Stephen King.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a writer, but he has movies.
Who directs this? But yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Steven Spielberg.
Sure. Let's go with that. Any director,
any Steven.
Or I'm trying to think of like, you know, a comedy versus, yeah, I think it's cool to kind of
change.
Imagine a world in which we can be all these different characters and different styles and different approaches, but coming from a place of truth or understanding the assignment going into a ballet, because we can technically try to perfect things all day long. But yeah, I'm really excited to just kind of push myself further and further and further. And I think when it, you know, just even logistically, getting to do different repertoire was always very interesting to me, and getting to perform more was always very interesting to me. And
so that was one of the biggest perks of my transition into ABT, was I had this full career of repertoire in Boston Ballet, where I got to do so much Balanchine. I got to do Forsyth and Killian and Yorma Elo and Helen Pickett and like all these very European style new choreographers, as well as like Balanchine and Robbins and that sort of like city ballet rep, basically.
Right.
And then when I joined ABT, I was like, what am I doing here? I felt like a sheep in the wolf den or whatever. I was like, I do not belong here. But it was so good for me to learn from these people, from the Marcellos, from the Coreys, from these unbelievable, from the Hermans of the world that are just like, they've been in ABT, they are ABT, and I have learned so much from being thrust into the deep end like that. So I want to talk about some decisions that you made. So like, you decide to either accept or reach out. I'm going to leave all of that very mysterious, how you got the gig. And you're going to take the contract. You're moving to Vienna from New York City. What were some of the challenges, just like logistically? Like, you have an apartment, you have all this stuff. What did you do? Like, how much time did you leave yourself before your next contract started? What's some of the nitty gritty of like uprooting your life for all of the people listening who might want to make a change or are thinking like, okay, it's not working for me here, I should try something else. Like, what does it actually look like?
Yeah. I mean, God, I think, literally just one step at a time. I'm still navigating it, you know? But logistically, I reached out to people who I knew would have some answers. Like, I think sort of the most overwhelming thing in the beginning was just looking at the list of to-dos and not really knowing where to start. But I was so, I felt so grateful for the community that we have, because the second people found out that I would be going and where I was going, they immediately said, "Hey, I know someone in the company who can help you, who can, who's an American, who's done this move, like have a call with them, just like start to prepare." And, you know, my parents are the best. I mean, they really just, anything I needed, my mom is the opposite of me. She makes lists. She checks them twice. She does all the research. And I hate
Is she asking. Santa?
She's literally Santa. My mom is here in her purse, folks. My mother is Santa. And she's amazing. She just was like, okay, got it. I'm going to look into international shipping companies. Like she just, she's incredible. Like ultimate organizer, can manage any situation. If anyone's doing an international move, call Cheryl. She will help you.
Was the visa process like? I know you were like, you wanted to really just jump out the window for much of that.
No, totally. I mean, and everything's in German. it's like overwhelming to even like recount this time. I'm like, but I was lucky. I mean, I started the process way earlier than anybody should. Like there were moments where I just knew what my year was going to look like. And I thought, I'm going to start this now, like immediately, so that I give myself time to make mistakes. Because I know myself at this point, and I know Smart. I'm going to do something wrong. So I thought, they're like, oh, you don't need to start applying until April. I was like, great. So I'll start applying in March. You know, the most ahead of anything one can do, just do it, because you're going to make mistakes. And laws are changing all the time, I found. So just cover all your bases. Save your coins.
Yeah, you know, seriously. So expensive moving.
Yeah, but I also accepted a lot of gigs over the summer. So, you know, there were some things that I knew I would just have to bite the bullet, grin and bear it, use whatever phrase you want. I thought it's going to be exhausting. It's going to be hard. And it will be okay. So some days I would just wake up and I thought, I physically cannot translate another form from German to English. But you know what? We're going to make our coffee. We're going to do one word at a time. And so I guess that was sort of the logistical, you know, thing. I got my visa. I leaned on everyone. I asked what was a really good growth moment for me was asking for help.
Yeah.
I hate asking for help. And I didn't know how much I hated it until I went through this process.
Also, sorry to cut you off there, but I feel like this whole process, you were doing this while you were doing your final performances with ABT. Yeah. And that just sounds really stressful to me. But I also think emotionally, that must have been wild. And I want to know a little bit more about the feelings you had in your, you know, like last 3 weeks, say, performing with American Ballet Theatre.
Yeah. I think just the most full of, I'll get emotional just saying it, but like the most full of love and gratitude that I have felt being in this group of people and getting it's like until the chapter is going to close in a more physical way, because we go through seasons all the time, right? It's like all met, all this, all that, like that was such a fun ballet, and it's like always a bit like, oh, I love you guys. But this was a moment of, my God, I just want to soak up every single little mundane moment. And it allowed me to enter into my performances with so much more gratitude and just like such a thin skin that I think served me well to just be like really gentle with myself throughout that whole time period, but then also to just like be really vulnerable in the work. Like I found I had some really nice moments on stage where I felt like I could quite literally just get lost because I thought like, who cares after this, you know what I mean? Like literally just leave it all out there. And in a way that, I don't think I could have experienced had it felt like this. Cause like our Giselle, you know, it was just like, oh, how special is this that we've had so many amazing journeys together. And then to be able to share the stage in this ballet and, you know, surrounded by these people and this company, like how many things had to, I get very like woo woo about it, but I'm like, how many things had to align for like us to have that moment together and how special that is. And, you know, if it'll ever happen again. And so to just really, it just forces me to be so utterly present and in a state of flow. I didn't have the like, the little things didn't bother me as much.
That's amazing. Yeah.
It sounds so dramatic, but it's almost like when someone's going to pass or something. It sounds so extreme to go there, but it's like the things that usually bother me, my perspective was different and nothing really bothered me. I was like, God, I'm just so grateful, you know, so I didn't get to do that ballet, whatever. So I couldn't order my pad thai tonight, whatever. You know, it's like the things that usually just like really grind you into the ground. It was just like the most beautiful dose of perspective and gratitude and love.
Perspective is such a beautiful thing. Oh my goodness. When you get to have that, the realization that you really are just doing the best you can and that you get to be kind to yourself and be proud of yourself and free just because of the reality of the current situation. I am not going to be doing this forever. This is the last couple of times. How beautiful is this?
Yeah.
And it was really, really stunning to watch also, because at the same time, it was like, you don't realize that you've grown up with these people. You're around them every day. They're annoying the crap out of you. You love them so much. You're exhausted. It's hard work and we're really hard on ourselves, but you're experiencing all of this in a very intimate way with other people. And watching people sort of rally around you at that time was so beautiful. And then Jillian retiring like in a similar time frame, it was just a crazy, it was a crazy Met season for losses, for me personally and for the company. I just felt so grateful, but also very sad because... you know, I've danced with you and Jillian so much, and I have so many wonderful, wonderful, beautiful memories on stage with the both of you. So selfishly, I'm sad, but I'm also just so happy to hear how interesting all of this has been and all the perspective that you have gained. So I'm going to fast forward again, and you are moving to Vienna. You got an Airbnb or something because you didn't even have an apartment when you moved there, correct?
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. So basically, I accepted gigs all the way up until a few days before I moved here because, well, one, money, and two, I needed something to keep me in shape because Alessandra had let me know that I'd be doing my first performance only a few weeks after starting rehearsals, which was Giselle. And so I am the kind of person who really needs a schedule and a project to cling to in order to keep that momentum and that drive. If I had turned these gigs down, I think it would have been much harder for me to get to the studio every day. If I'm being like, I'm fully honest, especially because of like, just the emotional and the physical, like it was just a lot. So I was like, I need something to keep me going. And Other Dances with Isabel Guerin is going to keep me going every day.
I mean, if Isabel can't keep you going.
we love Isabel. Isabel's best. So shout out Isabel. I didn't have any time to find an apartment. I knew I wanted to take my time to properly look for a place. So I just committed to this Airbnb. I used someone else as a sponsor to use their address to apply for my visa.
Wow.
Brendan Say, who's a beautiful dancer. Shout out Brendan. It was just me problem solving every step of the way. So I had movers come and pack up just the few things that I knew I wanted to bring with me, because the thought of getting here, being in an empty apartment and trying to find furniture and learn how to exist in a new country and a language and new ballets, it was just performing right away. It was too much. So I thought, what's going to help me feel the most comforted? And I thought being surrounded by my couch, my rugs, my artwork, you know, so that was my choice to just get it all over here. And, but I knew those things weren't going to arrive for a couple of months. So that gave me time to get here, be in an Airbnb, properly hunt for an apartment. And
you finally found one, right?
One. Yes. I love her so much. I'll give you the tour later. It's amazing. I am really, really grateful. I mean, yeah, it's kind of wild what we,
what's cost of living like over there? Yeah. New York is disgusting and incredible at the same time.
All at the same time. I know, it's the best. I miss New York so much. But cost of living is, I mean, it's very affordable to live here. Everything works. Everything's clean.
Shady.
I don't know what to say. But that's the thing. I remember arriving and feeling like I needed to be a little dirtier. Like my nervous system is way too calm.
Oh my God. The assault that is New York City. Oh my God. I'm just like vibrating like a cold chihuahua at all times.
I was like, if I feel like I can walk home at 1 a.m. without any danger, do I even want it?
Yes, you do. I promise.
No, I'm kidding.
Okay, so you got a place. You're settled into an apartment. You've already done a number of performances with the company. So you've done Giselle, and you've done Of Love and Rage, formerly Of Love and Rage, now renamed to Kalaroi, which is an Alexei Ratmansky ballet that was created on American Ballet Theater in 2020. It premiered like 2 weeks before COVID really shut everything down. Those were our last performances before we shut down everything. So tell me what it's like returning to Kalaroi, I'll call it.
Yeah, Kalaroi. It was kind of remarkable because I felt like being surrounded by so much unfamiliar, it was comfortable to be in the studio with a lot of familiar. I mean, for those of you who don't know, we've basically grown up in ABT with Alexei. And so to have him at the front of the room, Nancy Raffa, who's a ballet or director of repertoire with ABT, staging his work here in Vienna. You know, we had, you can edit this out. What's his name? The repetitor that worked with us, or the dramaturg. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Eric Tam came. And I just looked at the front of the room, Marcello. I thought, oh my gosh, it's like my ABT. This is great. It was really, really cool. And, you know, I was a part of creating the role of Kalaroi, but I never had the chance to perform it. So it was a really cool breakout moment, I think. A nice little way to honor the new chapter and to perform something that I had a hand in and worked really hard on all those years ago.
Nancy staged it. So, like, I don't know how she stages things, because I'm usually she's in ABT and I am, and we're just doing what we're doing. But like, does she work off a video? Like, because I'm sure, I think I originated my role in that. I'm pretty sure
you did, and I could not unsee your Shanae turns across the stage in that war. Like I felt like what was fun about the process was I was sharing with people like, oh, well, that part was created because James Whiteside has the most amazing Shanae turns. Like, I like this moment where you like reach for the stars. I can't see anyone else do it but you in my head.
That is so funny.
Oh my God.
I always say, like, you know how some people can do like 540s? Like, you know how like Danielle can do 540s or like barrel turns or like a million pirouettes? My party trick is Shanae's. I'm like, it is so low impact. I'm like, this is brilliant. I'm going to do Shanae's and the audience is going to gag.
Like, what a gift. Shanae's, you and Tyler Peck. Like
me and Tyler, and Jillian's got, and Devin's got crazy Shanae's too. Let's celebrate that.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
So getting to perform it, like you did the damn thing after, you know, what is it? 5 years, 6 years. Did you feel like having to wait was a good thing, or do you wish you had been able to do it back when it was created?
I mean, it's both. I think I would have loved the opportunity then, you know, I felt like, I enjoyed the process. The music is beautiful. The movement is beautiful. I think when you invest so much into something, you do hope you'll get the moment.
Period.
Yeah. But I also know that it wouldn't have been, I don't think it would have been as good. Like, I think I have so much more knowledge now and, of how to use my instrument and dramatically, mm-hmm. and you know, and I'm older. And so I think,
I'm a Scully.
A Scully?
Yeah. You said you're a Mulder. I'm a Scully.
I'm missing it. I don't understand the joke.
I'm doing an X-Files reference, you know, Scully and Mulder.
No, I don't know X-Files. Oh no.
That's criminal. You would love it. It is so chic. Especially looking at it now, it's so chic.
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah, I think you'd really enjoy.
Okay, done. That's it's happening. I'll start tonight when I saw my point.
You're gonna love it.
Yeah, you've been back on the X-Files for a minute.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite TV shows when I was a teenager. And I've watched it a number of times, but I did a rewatch like last year of the series, and I love it so much. I still love it, and I definitely am a Scully. You'll know.
I can't wait to understand the reference. Wait, can you imagine what it's about really fast? Just like,
yes. So here, are you ready for the log line?
Yeah. Government. Give it to me.
The government covers up the knowledge of the existence of extraterrestrials.
Got it.
Scully and Mulder are put on this sort of special area of the FBI, the special sort of mission of the FBI to investigate paranormal and extraterrestrial activity. And, you know, Mulder's got this whole backstory with his sister being abducted and everything. And Scully, who's a doctor, is put on the team to basically debunk Mulder's like woo-woo energy. Because he's very like, I'll believe anything. He wants to believe. And she's like, that's not real, Diva. You're crazy. But a lot of it turns out to be like, you know, what's the tea? You got to watch. It's great. It's so 90s. It's so late 90s, like mid to late 90s. It's perfect. It's like a companion, a sort of commercial companion to Twin Peaks, if you ask me.
Oh, done. Because mm-hmm. you know, love. Love.
And it's kind of camp. It's great. You're going to love it.
Oh, so funny. It sounds like there are great colors involved.
Oh, the costumes are amazing. It is very hyper stylized. Like, it's a lot of smoking. It's great.
So much fun. I'm going to be so mad when I'm really deep in X-Files and I'm watching this back and I'm like, you imbecile, you should have been watching it all along. Okay, this is great. So yes, I'm a Mulder for sure. I'm definitely spiritual woo-woo girly and you're definitely Scully. You're like, girl, that's not real. And I'm like, but it could be.
Okay, this is running a little long, so I'm going to tie it all in. You ready for me to do my podcast magic right now? You ready?
Okay. yeah. Wait, I feel like you asked a question that I didn't answer, but
I was asking about your sort of excitement about getting to finally interpret on stage Kalaroi. Yeah. And you felt like good.
We answered it, right? I think, yeah, it was so fun. Oh my God. Also, like, just being with new people. I mean, I miss everyone so much. That's what I was going to say. I think it's cool to come into a new place at this chapter in my life, at this age, at this level. And I think those are the moments where you can really understand how far you've come as a person and a dancer and look at how much more there is to do. So it's exciting. Anyway, do your...
I think it's really interesting also because, like, being a principal in ABT affords you a certain amount of visibility in the dance world, and it being such a small world to begin with, you're like a principal dancer with ABT, you have like your Instagram and like you're a visible person in the world of dance. Showing up to another company, it's interesting because like most of them already know you and are familiar with perhaps even your personality as a result of the internet. Did you feel like that hindered or enabled your ability to connect with people?
You are so right, James, because I hadn't even imagined a world in which what you said was the truth for some reason, because I knew going in that there had been a lot of changes in the company and that I'd be coming into a place where there's a lot of dancers who are established there and a lot of dancers who have spent a lot of time there. And it's destabilizing for a whole new group of people to come in. And so I thought I need to go in with, you know, just be humble and be respectful and keep your head down and be kind and, you know, basically don't come in just like, hey, y'all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's like keep it chill. Let's be, you know, nice and respectful and recognize that it's their home, you know, and you're a guest for now until you feel like you've earned the family member position, so to speak. But I have to say I've felt so welcome by everybody. Like I walked in and to your point, people came up to me and they just said, we're so excited you're here.
Wow.
And I felt so like everyone just made me feel like very, very warm and very welcome and like they were just excited to have me be in the space with them. And that was, it just made me feel so good and so comfortable. And I can't thank everyone enough for that. And people helped me move in. Like right off the bat, everyone was like, we're going to find you an apartment. When do your boxes arrive? We're going to come over. We're going to bring, you know, just the most
amazing
community very quickly. And it really extraordinary. I think.
And you invite that. Let's also establish that.
Thank you. Yeah.
So more importantly, have you found a film development lab that you like?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I've tested everywhere.
But let me tell the listeners. So Cassie's an amazing film photographer. If you don't know her work, you can look at her photos on Instagram at Pearl Takes Pics, at Pearl Takes Pics. Check out her beautiful photos. Also, you should follow her ballet account if you don't follow her at Cassandra Chinnery. But the photos are outrageous and, finding a good film lab is very important to a film photographer. So tell me about your process here.
Yeah. Thanks, James. That was so nice. And also very inspired by you and all of your work as well. And your
thanks. Vice well, versa.
There are many places here. I've been shopping around and I've just kind of had to be comfortable with them not all being hits, meaning my images. So I'm just kind of like shooting a lot and it's expensive. This hobby is expensive, y'all.
So expensive. Take all my money.
But it's it's worth it.
It is. I love it so much. It's a passion.
I love it. I It's so good. But it's taken me some time, but I have to say thank you to people who follow me on Instagram, because people were sending me recommendations left, right, and center when I just put the ask out, does anyone know of a place? And my favorite spot happens to be right by the opera. And they're called
So Convenient.
So nice, because convenience is key.
And wait, what's it called?
Photo Foyer. And yeah, they do really, really beautiful scans. And I've been really happy with how they've developed everything. So
we're awesome.
Yeah, I'm very, very grateful. And I mean, honestly, Vienna's interesting. I had this thought yesterday that it's actually like, if you're someone who likes living in a small town, this is the city for you.
Hmm.
In the short amount of time that I've been here, I run into people. It's like a neighborhood, but it's a city. It's so strange. It's like, I'll be in the grocery store and I'll be like, oh my gosh, hey, like.
That happens in New York though. That happens so much in New York. The amount of times I've run into people, it's crazy.
You think? I don't know. It happens. Well, okay, but here
I see the same gay people everywhere, Diva.
But imagine if like that community were just like in an even smaller place.
Yeah.
Like I'm running into like the woman who I like get my groceries from, you know, like, but on the other side, and I'm like, oh, hey, so, like, I don't know you, but I know you.
The pears were divine this week.
Like, and it's like, oh, hi, like, how are you? I'm like, I feel like I'm in Lawrenceville, Georgia again.
Wow. Wait, going back to cameras for a moment, I recently bought my friend who lives in LA, beautiful photographer, was selling one of his cameras to upgrade to the newer model. And I bought my very first fancy digital camera. It is a Fujifilm X-T4. And I shot a bunch of things during Nutcracker on it. It was so much fun. I am learning so much. It is so difficult. It's so different than my like, you know, easy film stuff, but I'm learning so much and I love it. It is so fun.
Fujifilm digital
X-T4, camera. X-T4, so yeah.
A filter, or it like makes it look like.
Yeah. Film. So, it's like highly, highly customizable, and you can apply these sort of custom settings to it. You can have up to 9 custom recipes, they're called. So my favorite film to shoot is Ilford HP5 400. It's black and white. I love shooting black and white. I love the drama. I love the contrast.
I love black and white.
So like the first thing I did when I got this camera was like go in and set up an Ilford HP5 recipe on it. And it's like, I'll text you some pictures that I took. And it's so fun. And it's teaching me a lot about like exposure and aperture and all that good stuff. All the things that you learn on like a hyper manual film camera, but it's all, you know, digital. So I'm really experimenting with everything. It's so cool. And next time you're in town, I have to like give it to you for a weekend or something because it is so fun.
I think, what I enjoy about film is it kind of forces me to be more discerning with what I'm capturing. And I feel
because it's
like
money, honey.
Digital, it's going to be hell. Like I'm just going to be like, brr, 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 and I'm afraid of that journey. So
it's been fun.
That's great. Oh my gosh. I can't wait to see them. Are you shooting like crazy now? Like all of
not really. Like I'm still being pretty discerning. Also, it's just such an invasive looking thing. Like it's bigger. It's sort of like, my little point and shoot Olympus LT1 is so like covert. I can sort of just like whip it out of my pocket and be like, whoops. And this, I feel like it's an announcement like, oh, annoying photographer girly is here. So
yeah, I know.
I've been more like selective on when I'm shooting, and I constantly think I'm going to get yelled at or like turned away from people, but nothing traumatic has happened yet. Okay. Wait, before we end this, I started a Substack recently, which is, do you know what a Substack is yet? Have you heard of this?
Yeah. No, I'm hip to the Substack. A lot of people in my life that have Substacks now.
A lot of who?
A lot of people in my life.
Oh, yeah. It's like the thing right now. Cringe. But I really enjoyed doing it because I like writing and, you know, that's something that I've enjoyed. But I asked people on Substack, I said that I was going to be interviewing you and, you know, like what should I ask Cassie? So I'm going to, read you a thing.
Okay, cool.
All right. Let me see. Okay. So Alexandra asked, how do you perceive the change and how have you prepared for it? Let's say emotionally and physically.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is therapy. Therapy.
You better work.
So much to prepare for this change. If that answers the question in the way that it was intended, I think, just preparing my mind and my body to know that it's going to be hard. There are going to be dark days and it won't be forever. And I'm literally talking to myself right now as I say it because it is hard. It's emotionally very hard. Like I've sent James 10-minute podcasts or audio messages that he didn't ask for saying, I'm sad.
I can just picture you over there, listening to the saddest Taylor Swift song you can find and having a glass of wine and being emo.
I'm just with my camera and my journal. And I've been listening to a lot of Brian Eno. Do you know who that is?
Of course, Brian Eno.
Yeah, that's it. But I those sort of
ambient.
I was trying to just remind myself every step of the way, everyone in my life is a phone call away. It's going to be sad. It's going to be hard. If you feel like crying, just cry. Don't feel like you have to be a hero and hide how you feel while being professional. It's hard, but, how else did I prepare? To tell you the truth, it just comes back to leaning on people.
Yeah.
Time and time again, I think the gift that this time has brought me is reminding myself that there are people who will be there for me, whether it be physically or emotionally. And I can be better about receiving that support. That's kind of it.
In the famous words of Maureen in Center Stage, take it all, bitch.
The prophet.
Okay. Another question here from Ren Media. I don't know what that means. You've often been described as having a European sensibility in your dramatic interpretations. Now that you're actually there, what has been the biggest culture shock in terms of how rehearsals are run or how performances are coached?
Thank you for I think it's a compliment. First of all, I really appreciate that because, a lot of people in my life had always said oh my gosh, you're going to fit in so well over here. And, I see now it kind of goes back to what we were speaking about earlier, where a lot of, the rep over here is, these dramatic narrative full length works, John Neumeier and Macmillan and Krenko. And how have I found that things are different? I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is that the house is packed. Every show is sold out. I feel like the appreciation for ballet is something I've never experienced before. My first performance of Giselle, it felt just the warmest welcome.
Wow.
We're on their feet. And it's not just me. It's that I come back and I watch my colleagues. I think everyone is very much invested. I think in New York, because there's so much going on, there's so many things to see, so many people doing the thing. There are so many ways to be invested in dance, which is a beautiful thing. Here, this is the thing.
It's giving monoculture.
It's, yeah. And
it's the heated rivalry of Vienna.
Wait, that's another series I haven't watched yet because everybody's talking about it.
You're giving homophobia for not watching that. Your ally card is revoked.
Wait a second. Oh, could you imagine? That'd be so sad.
You gotta watch it. It's so fab.
I know. I just, you know when everyone's obsessed with something?
You want to run away. Yeah. I super get that.
But I will watch it. And it will be in like a year. And then I'm going to be like, has everybody seen Heated Rivalry?
It's like when Bella asked me who if I knew who Rihanna was like 3 years ago.
No, she did not.
I love telling this story. She literally came up to me and she was like, oh my God, have you heard of Rihanna? She's so good. And it was like 2019. That's not the story. The story was like she asked me if I had heard the new Rihanna album, and it was the Anti album, you know, like ANTI or whatever, amazing masterpiece opus. Was, and it was literally like 4 years after the album came out, and I was like, girl, you do not have your finger on the pulse. God bless her.
I was the same with like Anora. I waited until everyone was done talking about it, and then I watched it, and I was like, oh, I should have watched it earlier.
I haven't seen it. You know what I haven't seen yet that everyone says is good, but I just don't want to watch it, is A Star Is Born.
The new one.
The Gaga one.
You've seen the others.
I haven't seen any Star Is Born. There's three, right? Or two.
Well, I don't know why I asked you like that. Because I haven't seen the others. Okay, our assignment, we need to go watch Judy.
Yeah, we'll watch Judy, and then I'll bite the bullet and watch Gaga's, because apparently it's amazing.
She was,
but I don't want to watch it. I don't want to see it. Don't make
I get it. And I kind of went into it. I mean, it's been a while. I wonder if I would enjoy the performance now through fresh eyes. But anyway, okay. What was the question? Oh, yeah. Just that the culture shock, the appreciation, and then how are rehearsals run? I mean, it's just anytime you get in front of a new coach, they bring something different, a new eye. They're seeing me differently. Specific to Vienna, I think what's been so enjoyable is Alessandra has brought in some remarkable people to work with us. Like Julio Boca was with us for the first 2 months of being here, and that was a joy. And we had already spent time with him at ABT during the summer, and that was a gift. So I felt like I was able to just continue building on the relationship that we had already developed. Having Julio and Alessandra together in the space working on Giselle was a real dream.
I have one more question. It's from me, but it's sort of, I'm adapting this person's question. Mm. So, all right, you get like 1 minute to advise somebody who might want to leave their current position, might want to take a really big career leap. What do you say to them? Go.
Oh my gosh, just do it. I think one thing I really had to be okay with is I asked myself, would I still do it even if I knew it was going to be a disaster? And I know that sounds kind of silly, but the answer was still yes. And it wasn't even because I was like unhappy or miserable. It was more just, I feel like I need a change. And so even if this move isn't brilliant or perfect or makes all of my dreams come true or all my problems go away, like I think it's an important thing to experience as a person to just challenge yourself and make a change, because even if it's difficult and a bad experience, it for whatever reason will lead you to something else. You know, like life, it's just short, but it's also long. And I think if you feel like you're uncomfortable and you're ready to just like shake it up, why not? Like, just do it. I don't know. I have nothing else to say other than just do it. Because even though I've had some really dark moments and moments of like, oh my God, am I going to be okay? I don't regret it at all. And I'm excited to see where it takes me, the people I meet, the places I go. I think if it's a real thing that you're considering, just do it. Like,
all right.
The worst that can happen. I mean, I don't know what y'all are going through. I don't know your decision.
All right. So you're about to get sued by like 500 people. I'm kidding. Cassie, thank you so much for joining me again on the Stage Right Side. I am so inspired by you. And I think what you're doing is amazing. Just keep it up. Be strong. Be proud of the work you've done. And up and up.
Thanks, Love Bug. Love you so much. Always inspired by you. And I'm so excited for all that you're doing. I really am.
Love you too, Cass. I'm going to stop the recording, all right? Mm-hmm. Make sure to follow me at James B. Whiteside on Instagram and TikTok. That's James B. Whiteside. And don't forget to click the link in my bio to purchase tickets for upcoming performances or to buy my book, Center Center, a funny, sexy, sad, almost memoir of a boy in ballet. Enjoy!